The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back, and tomorrow marks the return of one of the greatest, if not the greatest, rivalry in the history of women's college basketball. UConn heading to Knoxville in honor of course, Pat Summitt, the We Back Pat, the week that we talk about here every single year. And are we excited to welcome in our next guest, who is about as closely associated with the University of Tennessee women's program as anyone. Candace Parker was there about 12 years ago, winning two national championships and being the dominant player in the game, and obviously has gone on to great heights in the WNBA. Candace, thank you so much for making time. We hope you're well.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I know talking about Pat Summitt is something that you love, and I know it's also painful to think about her being gone, but let's start with the impact, the influence that she's had on, forget your career, your life.
Yeah, I carry her with me every single day, and I think that it just speaks to how powerful coaches, educators, teachers, mentors can be in our life. And I say that, you know, not as a basketball player, of course. You know, there's times on the court when I know I need to go rebound and I hear her voice, but as a parent, you know, as a teammate, as a human, just in every aspect of life, I carry her message and her teachings with me. If you think about just from 18 to 22 years old, how powerful those years are and growth. And to say she was like a second mom is an understatement. And love her to death. Trying to get me emotional.
I only knew her as a reporter. I didn't play for her, and it's still hard to think about the influence that she's had on anyone, Candace, that she came in contact with. I'm curious. We know how you feel about her, but I'm give the audience, for maybe younger people that have only seen videos, what it was like not only to play for her but to be stared down by her.
Man. You know, I think for me, the biggest, and we've seen just in our country, actions speak a whole hell of a lot more than words. And coaches' actions on a daily basis is what impacted women's basketball. And, you know, I think it's just her stare, but what was behind that stare. You know how when parents say, you know, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. That's what that stare was, because you knew how many hours and how much effort and how much energy she put into everything.
I mean, to put it mildly, you're one of the greatest players in women's college basketball history. So, you know, the stare may not have felt quite as piercing as maybe some of the players who didn't have your talent, but. How did she affect you, though, and motivate you? Because it seems like in watching you and watching all of her players, you know, good wasn't good enough.
Good was not good enough, especially when you had somebody that was willing to put the time and the energy. I use this analogy all the time. She's one of the greatest coaches, but she did the little things perfect. She would always come to the huddle, and I think she set me up for a lot of learning later in life that not everybody's like that. She would come to the huddle and automatically say, "What do you guys see?" And for somebody that was the best at what she does and the best at her craft, for her to listen to others, I think that was her biggest gift. Is she tried to surround herself with people that maybe didn't think like her, maybe didn't see the game like her. And I think that that's something that I've taken just individually as a person, as a human being, that, you know, no matter how great you are or no matter how many championships you won, there's still somebody that can teach you something. And, you know, she was all about that. And then I'll tell you another story. I think I was a young freshman coming in at 18 years old. You think you know everything. And she got on me the day before in practice, you know, about energy, effort, and just bringing it. So the next day, we had a 6 a.m. practice, and I decided I was going to get to the gym at 4, and I was going to be in sweat and be ready to practice and show her that I was ready to take that step to be that great player. And I get there, I pull up to the gym, and her light in her office is already on. So that's who Pat Summitt was, day in and day out. She was the hardest worker. She put the most amount of energy into everything that she did, and she didn't just speak about working hard, she demonstrated it.
Candace, off the court, and you know, you had such great success and went on to great heights. What was it like, or how different was it after you were gone and would come back and visit with her? I'm sure the relationship was probably a little calmer than maybe when you played for her.
A little bit calmer. I think just relating to her as a mom, you know, it was a lot calmer. I wasn't worried that she was going to yell out a defensive scheme or anything like that. But I think just relating to her as a mom and being able to lean on her, I think a lot of people, when I first had my daughter and was pregnant with my daughter, they just assumed that my career was probably not going to be, you know, what I wanted it to or what anybody else envisioned. And I think coach served as that hope that you could do both, that you could balance family, you could be the best mom that you could be, but you could also go out and be the best coach or doctor, or lawyer, whatever you chose to be. And so I leaned on her heavily those first couple of years when I was trying to balance family and career. And, you know, she taught me a lot about how important it is to eat dinner with your kids, make sure they know that you're present, but also be present where you're at and understand that your kids are okay with you doing things and seeing you be strong and in leadership positions and how important that is.
Candace, I saw an interview earlier today with one of Kamala Harris's sorority sisters from college. And you know, there was such pride in knowing that her friend and sorority sister is now the Vice President of the United States. What is it like when you communicate or see one of your, it's not even the players that you were with, but that large group of young women, some not so young any longer, who all played for...
Be included. You can say it. It's okay. You know, it's super special to see others have success. And, you know, I really do take the phrase of coach's proud moments of knowing other people are succeeding. And I know she wouldn't admit it, but because of her, because we're able to see her and what she's able to accomplish and the values and the morals and the work ethic that she was able to instill in us, allow us to go out and be police officers and coaches and, you know, administrators and teachers. And that's what coach considered herself to be, as a teacher. And, you know, that's what all of our coaches are now. If you think it's just about X's and O's, it's not. You're setting up your kids for failure. You have to be what you want your kids to be. And you have to teach them more than just the sport.
Candace, finally, all of us are looking for help in whatever we do, especially coming out of this long 10 month, it feels like 10 years of this pandemic. But I'm really interested in what you learned and what made her so unique, so different, and so great.
I will say this, and I might get a little choked up when I talk about it, but it's to handle your success like you handle failure. She was the same person when she was sick as she was when she was winning championships. And a lot can be said for somebody that continues to believe in the things that they believed in when things were going great, continues to persevere through things that are challenging. And for me, you know, she taught me so much when she was sick, just in the way that she handled it and how she carried herself. So I wasn't expecting today to be like this, but gosh, we miss her.
Candace Parker, I on behalf of all of us, we can't thank you enough for sharing those memories. You be well and all the best. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Wow. Candace Parker joining us, and we will take a short break, back with much, much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Call Feinbaum now. 855-242-7285. That's 855-242-PAUL. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show.
We welcome you back. Great to have you here. Landon Dickerson has made official what many have suspected he would do. The All-American Remington Award-winning center is going to the NFL. Let's get back to the calls. And Jim is up next in Knoxville. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Paul. Great show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you very much.
Just a couple of quick questions for you. With everyone waiting around for the NCAA and see what's going to happen here in Tennessee, I was just wondering, does the SEC have anything to say about it? And could they bring their own sanctions on Tennessee?
No. The SEC acts as a support to the universities. They can give advice and counsel, but the conference will not participate, I think, in the sanctions. Now, I think there are some there is an ability for the league to do that, but I don't think you'll see it in this case or in very many cases.
Okay. My other question is, when this story was first brought out here in the local news, they said that there was possible violations with the lady basketball also.
Yeah, Jim, I don't know that. I did hear that, and I'll ask our next guest, Gentry Estes, who covers that area, if he knows anything. But I have not heard anything with any degree of specificity on that subject. Ryan is up next in Tennessee. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
We are doing great.
So I just wanted to get your thoughts on kind of, I guess, the overall situation. I don't know if you heard Gino's comments about the game tomorrow night, that it's not a big deal anymore. But, I mean, I think if you look at this game and just the gravity of what this game means, the college basketball, women's basketball in general, this was the greatest college basketball rivalry, I think, in the history of just about all sports. So I have a hard time him saying that this game tomorrow night does not matter, because not only is it the fact of the rivalry, but, you know, it also means more with, you know, honoring Pat Summitt with We Back Pat Week, and then, you know, the Pat Summitt Foundation.
Yeah, so Ryan, I never get too concerned about what Gino says. A lot of it is gamesmanship. I'm really glad the game is back. It's a game that we've all looked forward to in the past, and obviously he and Pat had some issues, and that was made very public, but I'm glad that has been rectified. But I'm sure he's just trying to be Gino. That's who he is. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. And Randy is in New Orleans. Randy, thank you and good afternoon. Randy, you there? Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you.
Paul, I'm a big-time LSU fan. I'm almost 67 years old. And I love what Ed Ogeron did, you know, last year, or year before last, I guess you should say. But my thing is going back to when he hired Matt Canada, then he hired Boccolini. You keep these guys around for 1 year, Paul. I mean, they go through the interview process. What goes on? You give them 1 year, and then the university winds up having to pay a lot of money to buy them out of their contract. I just don't get it, Paul. I really don't.
Well, Matt Canada was a disaster, and so was Boccolini.
But what goes on in the interview, Paul? I mean, I don't understand it.
Well, what goes on, Randy, is coaches make mistakes. They make these decisions in very quick time. And I think whether it's college coaching or hiring someone to be a sales rep, personnel decisions are among the very most difficult, and so often they are wrong.
You know, Paul, my thing is, this is just my personal opinion, that maybe if they held the coaches more accountable and some of the money came out of their salary, they'd do a better job with the hiring. I thank you, Paul. I enjoy your show.
Thank you, Randy. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Billy up next in Florida. Hey, Billy, go right ahead.
Can you hear me, Paul?
Yes, I can.
I just want to know what your feelings are about the Auburn hire, you know, with their new coach and what he's brought in to Auburn. Including a couple of ex-players there. So how do you feel about that program coming about?
I think it's going to be difficult. He's brought some of his coaching staff from Boise. He's retained, he brought Derek Mason over, Bobo, and one or two others. But I don't think I really know how to answer your question. You know, I don't know him. Very few people do. He's got a good record offensively. But he's involved in something that will be very foreign to him when it comes with dealing with the culture of not Auburn, but of the SEC. That takes some getting used to.
Well, exactly. No, but, you know, I mean, I'm not an Auburn fan, but what I'm trying to say is Boise State, I love their offense they had at Boise State. You know, I used to follow them.
Yeah, but are you talking about his offense or are you talking about, you know, Chris Peterson's offense?
I'm talking about just whatever when he was coached at Boise State,
yeah.
Whatever offense he had.
Well, anyway, the bottom line is I don't think anybody really knows. I think it was an interesting hire. Beyond that, I wish him well. Chuck is up next. Hey, Chuck, go right ahead. Chuck is in Georgia. Chuck, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you very much.
I've got a statement, and then I got a little question. Statement is, I hate it that, you know, you're somewhat of a face for the University of Tennessee and that you're having to deal with all this big scandal up there and having to report on it. But that was my statement. And my question is, what is your opinion of Will Muschamp joining Kirby Smart's staff? And I'll get off the phone.
Yeah, Will has been down there for a couple of days. There's still some confusion over exactly what he will do there. I think he'll be an assistant coach. I think he's a great assistant coach. I think he will help Kirby Smart. It's his alma mater. I don't think that's a mystery. Will Muschamp was going to get a job as an assistant coach. Appreciate the call. Ed is up next in Alabama. Hey, Ed.
How are you, Paul?
Hey there.
I'm calling, you know me, I worked in the Alabama sports office 41 years.
Yes, sir.
And we've met many times when you wanted to see the head coach or one of the assistants. Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here, Ed.
But I wish you would explain to your audience, the university, the most they can pay a head coach is $120,000 a year. all the money risk comes from boosters or corporations. So they're not losing. It's just like the chancellor at the University of Tennessee. Her money comes from the boosters. Most of, that's the reason you've had five in the last 10 years. She's trying to keep her job.
Well, you're right, and I'm glad you said that, Ed, because you know, the money comes elsewhere, and you know, we all get caught up on the university per se paying the coach, but they don't.
No, they do not get no, and the chancellors they pay very. The state can only pay her $120,000 a year. Same thing it is in Alabama or Louisiana, state law. And as far as the rest of it, this reason Auburn stands out. If you would check, Auburn has a 7% black enrollment. 5.8% of that is athletes. Why do they not have a problem firing their coach? You just heard it. They're going to pay him off where he keeps his mouth shut. Now, chapter and verse, you know, I'm not saying I'm not prejudiced, but, you know, that's part of it.
Okay. Hey, thank you for the call. Andre is up next. Hey, Andre.
Coach Paul Feinbaum, y'all ran the guy off up there at your alma mater, didn't you, Coach?
We sure did.
Well,
and we're proud of it.
You know, you're a big-time alumni member from the University of Tennessee. I think you had a hand in that.
I did. I made a donation last week of $10 to get rid of him.
Look, Coach, who do you think is going to be the next coach?
I don't know, because until they hire an athletic director, it's going to be difficult. Now, I will tell you this, Andre. Had Philip Fulmer remained as the AD, I think Kevin Steele would have gotten the job, at least short term, but I'm not sure that's going to happen now.
What about the Campbell guy up at Iowa State or Luke Fickell? You tell me what you think about those.
I think they're both. I think Luke Fickell's a fantastic coach, and the other guy is too. They would immediately be an upper echelon coach in the SEC. Either one of them. For some reason, that was the end of the call. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks, Andre. We are heading to a break. Gentry Estes writes about Tennessee for the Tennessean. He's covered a lot of schools in the SEC, and he will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Hey, we welcome you back. It's always great to get different perspectives, and our next guest has covered, I've lost track of how many SEC schools Gentry Estes has written about in his career. He joins us. He's now with the Tennessean. And Gentry, by the way, how many SEC schools have you covered? Good afternoon.
I think the count is 7, all told. Either as a beat writer or in passing, or so half the league. So I've got the other half to go.
Which brings me to the question that you wrote about, and many of us are still wondering what did we see Monday afternoon coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee? Because I ask you that because most schools don't admit anything. They barely admit they know the coach. And this chancellor not only admitted the obvious, but pretty much buried the coach in the process.
Yeah, I think it was a very successful strategy for not wanting to pay Jeremy Pruitt a $12 million buyout. I don't think it was a very successful strategy. However, for defending your institution against the NCAA, if you look at what the Chancellor Plowman said on Monday, she talked about the seriousness of the allegations. She said they were stunning. She said they were shocking. She even called them allegations. She called them violations at this point, basically confirming that they happened. Again, I think that this was in the interest of building a case to fire Jeremy Pruitt for cause. But what that does is, how are you going to be able to go before the NCAA Committee on Infractions here in a couple of years and try to argue these violations weren't level one or serious or shocking when that's exactly how you described them? And so as I wrote, I kind of feel like Tennessee needs to be careful here with how they're willing to describe these violations on the front end.
Yeah, and Gentry, I don't want anyone to misunderstand us. We're not advocating malfeasance, but I think we're so conditioned to universities obfuscating and lawyering up that it was extraordinary. I mean, there's a basketball coach at LSU that many are continue to wonder about, but his university hasn't gotten rid of him yet from a contractual standpoint. But Jeremy Pruitt, to save $12 million, and I don't, me being a former newspaper guy, you being a newspaper guy, we're not laughing at $12 million, but the total cost in terms of damage and carnage in this case will be a lot worse than $12 million that they would have had to pay Jeremy Pruitt.
No question. I mean, you can't help but look at this and say that it did seem like a means to an end to a degree to not have to pay that money. I don't think anybody can look at this and say, if Jeremy Pruitt had gone 9-1 this last season and won the SEC East, do you think this would still be happening? You know, probably not. If you look at other schools and, Will Wade and other situations, I mean, you look at who's still coaching and it's hard to believe that would be the case. And so given that, you're facing a situation with the NCAA that is not going to be resolved anytime soon. I think the prospect of sanctions would be scary enough to any prospective head coach, but it's also the idea of just having the cloud hanging over you for so long. It's going to hurt recruiting, and you're talking about something that could make it very, very difficult for whoever the next coach is for a number of years. So there's a reason that I think schools more recently have taken a firmer stance with NCAA infractions cases, because the schools that have had more success recently, and I think most notably North Carolina with the academic scandal, the schools that have basically admitted nothing and said, hey, go prove it, have been the ones who've ended up probably coming out better in the end, as opposed to the ones who admit everything. And in the case of Tennessee, not just admit it, but go ahead and talk about how bad it is.
I think you made a very interesting distinction, and as the chancellor was talking the other day, my eyebrows went up, and I know yours did as well, because usually you talk in terms of allegations. That's not what she said. And I don't believe, Gentry, we both have covered a lot of NCAA issues in the past. I don't believe I've ever heard a school on the front end admit to anything. Have you?
Not like that, no. And certainly not, you'll get some sort of confirmation. Yeah, there's an investigation ongoing and we're looking into this and this. But no, to sit there and hear, how serious it was and how stunning and shocking, it makes sense from the standpoint of, this is why we fired the coach for cause. This is why we're not going to owe him a buyout. But in making that case, I'm not sure Tennessee really grasped or at least acknowledged with their comments how this could look in the eyes of the NCAA. That's the sort of thing that's going to be a lot more costly than $12 million if this ends up being a major infractions case. And not only that, Paul, you're talking about adjectives. You're assigning the word serious to this. You need to make the NCAA assign the word serious to that. You need to make them decide what's serious and what isn't, what's level one. And I think eventually that is how it's going to play out. But again, Tennessee's hurting their own case by making it sound so grave on the front end, when eventually there's a very good chance they go before the Committee on Infractions and are going to try to argue that it isn't.
In terms of where the school is right now, searching for an athletic director and ultimately a football coach, how do you see this playing out, Gentry?
Well, I think it's first off, I think there'll be some kind of settlement with Jeremy Pruitt. There's a reason you don't see these things end up going to court, because I think that would, you know, the dirty laundry, I don't think that's something either side is going to eventually want out of this. So I do think that Pruitt's lawyered up, you know, hiring the attorney who represented the Kansas coach who did get the majority of the buyout that Kansas had been withholding from him. So I think you've got some legal representation that's going to fight and is going to probably get Tennessee to the negotiating table at some point. That's kind of one front. On the other front, okay, now you got to hire an AD. So you're going through that whole process, 2 weeks notice, whatever, until you can get somebody in. Then you're not going to hire a coach until after that. I mean, it's obviously the kind of situation here that you it's only January, but as you get into the off season, when you see schools have to do it right now in this way, that's when Alabama hires Mike Shula. That's when Ole Miss ends up with Matt Luke. That's when you end up with a guy who can kind of get you through this, because quite honestly, I think we've seen over the last 10 years that Tennessee's football head coaching job has gotten less and less desirable to candidates. And this just makes it worse. This is a completely new scenario with the NCAA violation. So you got to figure it's not going to be real easy to go chase a desirable candidate at this point. To me, what makes the most sense, and I don't know if it'll go this way, it makes sense to me to, you already have Kevin Steele on staff, is to, you know, remove the interim title at least for one season, or at least say he will be the coach for the 2021 season, to kind of get him through it. Because I think, you know, you got a coach in Kevin Steele that, my understanding, I mean, there were people at Auburn that wanted to hire him as the head coach. I mean, that's a pretty good option. Also, when you consider the fact the guy has ties to Tennessee, cares about the university and the program, to me, if I'm betting on it, I think you have to go with him, because, I mean, this is a very difficult situation for any new coach to want to go into, and it's hard to see guys like a Luke Fickell who are in good situations right now, being willing to leave that to take on this mess.
Gentry, before you go, I'm not suggesting a nuclear winter in Tennessee's future, although I'm also not suggesting bright sunshine and happy days. How do you think, regardless of the coach, because we always jump up and down and talk about a home run hire, even when they're normally not a home run hire, but how do you see the next couple of years playing out with this NCAA cloud raining down on them?
I mean, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I mean, you have to kind of view it that way, because the recruiting is certainly going to suffer, at least in the short term, possibly in the long term, depending on how this drags out. Again, you go back to the fact that, you know, look, there was rule breaking involved, and maybe it was serious. Maybe it was as serious as what Tennessee Chancellor said on Monday. But when you already put it in those terms, what is a prospective coach or a prospective recruit supposed to think? They are hearing nuclear winter. Now, I don't think that is going to be how it plays out. But you're kind of throwing it out there that, yeah, what we did was pretty bad. And how that plays out with the NCAA, whether or not this becomes a major infractions case or not, that's the perception that's out there right now, because that's a perception that Tennessee has already put out there. So, yeah, I mean, I think it makes it incredibly difficult for any new coach to come in and be able to build on a situation that quite honestly wasn't great to begin with. I think,
it's hurt Tennessee quite a bit over the years that they don't have the same kind of national brand that they had back in the Peyton Manning days. It was a lot easier. If you look at a lot of the key players on those teams going back to when Tennessee had it going, those guys, a lot of them weren't, they not only weren't from the state of Tennessee, a lot of them weren't even from the South. Tennessee was very good with Philip Fulmer at recruiting nationally. It's become a lot more difficult, similar to, I would say, a Nebraska. It's become a lot more difficult for that program to be able to successfully do that. And now it's almost impossible under the current circumstances.
Some really smart comments from Gentry Estes. Gentry, thank you. Thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
You bet. Take care, Paul.
Great stuff. Yeah, they have a problem on their hands, and platitudes are not going to help them right now. They need I don't know what they need. We'll talk about it in a minute. 855-242-7285. That is our number, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And welcome back. Great to have you with us. Jody is up next. Good afternoon, Jody.
Hey, Mr. Paul. How are you?
I am doing great. I hope you are.
Doing well, thank you. Long time caller. Been on your show several times and thoroughly enjoyed.
Thank you so much.
I call you the Atlas of college football, Mr. Paul.
Well, thank you very much.
Suggestion. I'm sure you've heard this before, but I've got to get it off my chest. You talk about integrity and honesty. AD and director for Tennessee, be Archie Manning, head football coach Peyton Manning. God, what a combination you would have there.
Yeah, it's interesting. Archie Manning has never really been interested in that, and I think at this point I haven't seen him in a while, but I know it's not easy for him to get around because of his knees. And Peyton, I think, would be uniquely qualified to do whatever he wanted. I've just never seen Peyton show any inclination to want to do anything other than behind the scenes.
Well, I still think it'd be a great combination. You know, because Tennessee needs some integrity there. And I think those two would prove it time and time again, sir.
Well, thank you for the call. Nolan is up next. Hey, Nolan, go right ahead.
Hey, man. I was just wondering, do you believe Gus Malzahn would be a good option for Tennessee, possibly as a head coach, with Kevin still being there? As a defense coordinator, the connection there, and like he built a family pretty much at Auburn. And honestly, I believe that I think like Tennessee is missing the chemistry, and like I feel like Gus Malzahn would be a good option for that. What are your thoughts on that?
No one, I'm not sure at this point having those two on the same staff is a good idea. There were reports of friction toward the end of Malzahn's tenure. In fact, John Talty, who was a guest here, I believe it was Monday, reported that some people have suspected or speculated that Kevin Steele worked to get rid of Malzahn. I have no idea whether that's true or not. I don't think they were particularly close. So I think bringing them back together again is not a great idea. I think Malzahn is an attractive choice, though, and you know, whether he's ready to tackle the dysfunctionality of Tennessee is unknown. He walked away from Auburn quite wealthy, and sometimes coaches decide to take a break before they dive right back in. But I do think he'll be a head coach again. We're up against a break. We've had a busy, busy show so far with Candace Parker. I hope you heard the interview. It was really poignant, her remembering Pat Summitt in honor of the We Back Pat Week. Gentry was with us a minute ago. Our next guest played at Georgia, Chris Kirk. He made a birdie on this past weekend to save his card, and that's only part of the story. Chris Kirk returns to the program after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.